Osiris.
Hi, I'm Bob Crawford from the Avett Brothers, and the podcast you're listening to is part of the Osiris Network, a global community connecting passionate music fans with podcasts about music, artists, and culture. For more information about all the shows in our network, please visit OsirisPod.com. Osiris.
Hey everybody, this is RJ with the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is a quick hit from the last night of Chicago, and I'm here with a special guest, a previous guest, a few times, Rob Mitchum. Rob, it's always good to talk to you and get your fish opinions. How are you feeling today after a three-day run?
Yeah, you know, tired. I am definitely out of prime fish shape, but yeah, having some hometown shows made it a little bit easier.
Cool. And you you did the review for fish.net for last night, right?
Yes. Just filed it when we're recording, and I imagine it'll be up by the time where this is out.
Cool. Yeah. So people should look at fish.net for Rob's take, but maybe that'll just be supplemental to what you tell us, because we want to get your take on last night and then the run as a whole. So how was last night? What were your kind of overall takeaways?
Yeah, I think, you know, of the three nights, last night probably had the most sort of interesting, I guess, contours and choices to it. That didn't always work, but that kind of goes hand in hand with when they're like feeling a little more unusual with the kind of set list they put together, the kind of mood they're going for. All weekend had this sort of, I mean, sort of rager, aggressive partying vibe, and I think they went with that for most of the weekend, and last night tried to push against it a little and didn't get anywhere, and then went back to it for the second set, which is probably a good move and made for just like a pretty, I think, unique take on the high energy set in set two last night.
Yeah, so really strong start last night with Everything's Right with the Jam, right? That song has been really delivering in terms of the improv.
Yeah, it's super consistent. I didn't think last night's jam was the most interesting version of it, but it built really nicely and kind of continued this sort of atmosphere they've been doing all weekend, sort of very methodically building up to sort of the, you know, the big peaky tray hits the high note and they flash the white lights sort of jam.
right.
You know, but, you know, for a set opener, That's pretty solid. Set openers were solid all weekend, I thought. Yeah, they didn't cheap out on any of that.
No, definitely not. And that's how it was in Hampton too. We saw several of those. Although we saw a lot more kind of dark jamming, I think, in Hampton than maybe this run. But what were your other kind of highlights from the first set last night?
Yeah, so the tube. I mean, it might have been my favorite jam of the weekend. I need, you know, a little more time to process and re-listening, but that tube was, you know, probably the best tube I've seen, at least in this era, and maybe even going back to the old days.
Nice.
It just had like such a patient approach and just very effects driven. As you said, we didn't get a lot of dark jamming this weekend. Or it wasn't dark in the same way where Hampton saw, and Nashville to some extent saw, sort of the more like dark ambient avant-garde type jamming. We got more like angry jamming over the three nights.
Yeah.
And but the tube was the closest to sort of that, just very textural, a lot of effects. Nobody was in any hurry, it seemed.
Yeah.
The lights were incredible. I didn't see a show last year. I missed all of 2017, so this is my first.
Oh man!
The like amazing moving light rig. It was doing some sort of like meteor storm effect, where things were just flying in ways that I didn't think was possible for machinery that large. And I think the band was as like into it as everybody else.
Good.
It was like you felt like the jam was like we're just watching this happen like you are. And then
the rig
this,
is insane,
you know, I'm
right?
A band section.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, it kind of, you know, grooved along like that for a while and then had a really nice sort of like angrier punctuation when they got into I'm a Man at the end there. The guy behind me was cackling demonically every time Trey went back to those courts. So it really felt good and Halloween-y there.
That's awesome. And it feels like I was just going to say the light rig is insane, right? You haven't seen it in person since they like made it even more mobile and looking like an alien.
Yeah, I mean, these were my 66 through 68 shows, and to still feel like, you know, a 16-year-old me when I saw the lights for the first time in 96, like, to get that feeling again is, I mean, we talk a lot about Phish improbably recapturing the musical feelings of what we all felt way back when, but to still just be, like, gobsmacked by the lights this deep into their career is also like pretty special.
It's just the
variety of looks he can do now. I mean, there's parts where it seems like he gets the lights so low it almost feels like a club atmosphere, where he's like just blasting them out all over the arena in like, you know, the most like audacious arena rock light spectacle you can imagine. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, that's true. Do you think at the beginning, you were kind of commenting on the second set in terms of, did you feel like, I saw some people on the internets, complaining that it was like a little meandering or not quite, you know, hitting the peaks of the rest of the weekend. Is that how it felt when you were there? What was your take on the sort of overall flow of the second set?
Yeah. You know, I liked the second set. I thought it kept me guessing as far as where it went. It didn't have any, you know, very lengthy stretch of jamming, I guess. But it all seemed very focused. It all seemed of, like, it kept a pretty consistent tone. The Carini was probably about as in the box as Carini has been in recent years. But, I mean, it set up just a really nice connection into No Quarter, which I didn't expect to hear at all and was very well played and even got some extra jamming, I think, for the first time. I can't remember another one that had that.
Yeah, that was that long for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I mean, it's like, yeah, another sort of like entry level Phish thing in some ways, but just the fact that they can put together a Led Zeppelin song and a Talking Head song, like, that is so wrong from like a classic rock canon perspective. Those are like two entirely different bands.
Right.
The fact that they can just like almost effortlessly like put that together is just like a really technically impressive feat to me and makes me laugh because, yeah, it's bizarre. What a weird band.
Rock critics everywhere were shaking their heads and stroking their beards.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, at least Steve Hyden and I were not. We may have been stroking our beards, but we weren't shaking our heads. So What's the Use is my favorite Phish song by a mile. Though it always bugs me, they just like started up out of nowhere. I don't think it really works as well like that. And this was kind of like the perfectly placed What's the Use, where the twist jam just got like more and more and more cosmic until it just felt totally natural for them to drop into What's the Use.
And I knew you liked that song, but I didn't realize it's your favorite. That's really cool. You got it.
I think it does what everything that I like about Phish. It like captures it in one composition
and no lyrics.
Nothing else really has, and it has no lyrics, right? Though it does, I guess, in the one weird version from the outtakes.
Oh, right.
But yeah, it's just like it is like they bottled the perfect Phish jam and made it a song. So I'm always down to hear it.
It's a good way to look at it for sure. And they in the middle of Twist and then back into Twist and then into Shade, which is a, you know, maybe if you're there, questionable late second set choice, but I really like that song and it seemed like it was a good breather before a really good Plasma.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought the show was kind of, I felt like a slave was coming. I felt like this is the Sunday night wind down. We're just going to chill out for the rest of the night. But Plasma, yeah, came out of nowhere and had a really sort of nice, interesting jam. It really called back to the Tweezer jam Friday. I mean, both of them had parts that, you know, might as well have been Party Time.
Right.
So it was kind of like a Twee Prize of a different sort, I guess. It's like, hey, remember that jam we played in Tweezer? We can do that again, too. Yeah.
I've been hearing that. You heard that all weekend, right? I also heard, like, it sounded like every jam was Blaze On, too.
Yeah, that was sort of like that, just sort of major key, like sort of, that sort of rhythm, New Orleans-y rhythm, I guess, was popping up again and again as sort of the release valve for a lot of more harder jamming. It was good, and it kind of kicked off like an unexpected last wind of, again, sort of raging jams. The character Zero was really intense, and Vish was feeling it, clearly. I think they did kind of blow through at least the soft curfew at Rosemont to do Bloodbed. So everybody got a little bonus fist bumping at the end.
Nice. So what's your takeaway from the whole weekend? And then the second part of the last question here is, are you playing the Halloween guessing game? And did you and Stephen Hutton, did you guys come up with any new theories after last night? Or are you trying to stay out of that?
Sorry, RJ, it broke up a little bit in that question.
It's all good. What's your sort of takeaway from the weekend, and are you playing the Halloween guessing game at all?
Yes. So I did kind of write into my recap that, like, it's kind of like the worst show to recap, the one right before Halloween, because, like, anything you say is going to, like, be irrelevant in 3 days, because it'll all make sense after we hear whatever they are deciding to do
right
tonight. I felt more so than predicting the next Halloween. The whole weekend felt a lot like Halloween 95 to me. And obviously we were in the same venue as Halloween 95. It felt like a very hard rock focused weekend. And even like things like the No Man's, which was, you know, by far the longest jam of the weekend and had the most sort of distinct sections, was still this kind of like riff focused, like hard rock jamming, that felt, you know, a lot like The Who. They didn't play anything from Quadrophenia, but I felt like they were in that sort of mindset a lot of the weekend. It was just like an angrier set of shows than I expected to see at this point in Fish's life. Like, I think a lot of 3.0 is very positive minded and happy and that's great. Like, up to a point. But I do sort of miss like the, you know, a little more like dangerous times of Fish. While I would prefer to be more dangerous in terms of like dark experimental jams, this was also kind of nice to hear Trey like really in sort of, you know, Hendrix shredding mode a lot more often than he has been in recent years. And it just kind of fits the Allstate Arena, that sound, because it's not the greatest sounding venue. So it seemed like they played really loud, both just in terms of volume and in terms of approach for a lot of the weekend, just to meet that sort of acoustic setting. It was like a different weekend than I expected in a lot of ways, I think, and felt a little more like sort of the shows I saw there in 99 and 2000 than I, you know, would have expected to hear in 2018. I think it's been a good sort of classic fall tour in a lot of ways. Like, it really feels like they're sort of in that atmosphere they used to get in, where everything seems just a little bit darker and a little bit more intense in the fall.
I agree.
In my recap, I get a little bit like political. We'll see how much that makes it into the final cut, but I mean, it was a bummer weekend outside of Fish.
Yeah.
It was terrifying to go back and read what was happening in the real world. And so Fish being angry, like, felt appropriate. And it makes the points where they did find sort of release and euphoria all the better, because it seems sort of grounded in just like the uncertainty that's all around us everywhere else.
Yeah.
The Fish show.
Totally, man. I totally agree and get that. And not to end on a downer, but yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on right now. And for people who get to go to see Fish, it is a release. And I think they realize that, but, it's a complex thing, right? It's not like they're reacting to anything directly. We're not, you know, it's all part of it, but I think it is like, it's so nice to be able to go and forget about the world for 3 hours.
Yeah. I don't want them to make an explicit statement about current events.
Right, right, because that's complicated in itself, right?
Right, but it is, like, nice to at least see some of that tone, I think, reflected in how they're playing, rather than it being just completely detached from reality.
Well, Fishman's certainly doing his fair share of commentating for the whole band.
Right, exactly. Just off stage, which is fine.
Yeah. Well, I encourage people to check out your Fishnet review, and thanks for joining. If we're going to send people out with a little music from last night, what do you want people to hear if they haven't heard the show yet?
Go for the tube. All right. I loved it. It was great.
All right, we'll go for the tube, and we'll talk to you hopefully again soon. Rob, maybe we can do another episode soon. It's always good to get your Fish opinions.
Yep, happy to be on whenever.
All right, brother. Have a good one. Have a good good luck recovering.
Yeah, thank you very much. I will.
Thanks everyone for joining. Check out our couch report from Vegas, which will be on Thursday afternoon. And I'll put a link to that in the notes. So thanks everyone for joining. Thanks, Rob. Talk to y'all soon.